and the community he proudly serves. In recognition of those heroic actions, we're proud to present Officer Hurst with the Life Saving Award. Officer Hurst, would you come up here, please? Stay over here, please. Please. He's trying to walk away. He has to stay up here. As a matter of fact, Anjanette, Cheyenne, would you please also come up here? Stand next to him. We're also here to wish to recognize the outstanding performance of Public Dispatch Safety Supervisor Anjanette Ordonez and Public Safety Dispatcher Cheyenne Pacheco. Their professionalism, effective communication, and ability to gather and relay critical information under immense pressure played an essential role in the successful outcome of this incident. Their efforts exemplify the indispensable role dispatchers serve as the initial first responders in every emergency. In appreciation of their exemplary service, Dispatch Supervisor Anjanette Ordonez and Dispatcher Cheyenne Pacheco are each awarded the Chief of Police Certificate Accommodation. Join us in congratulating Officer Alan Hurst, Dispatcher Anjanette Ordonez, and Dispatcher Cheyenne Pacheco for their exceptional service, professionalism, and unwavering commitment to protecting the lives of those in this community.
Okay, we're not done because the council is so proud of you. We would like to come down and take a picture with you. So, and it's our honor to do so. So, please.
Yeah. I want to make a point that this is the second time that Officer Hurst has been awarded the Life Saving Award. And the way he's trying to get out of here, I think maybe there's a call you need to go to or something. I don't know what. So, please come on down.
Well, we appreciate his humility as well. So, thank you. Well, we always appreciate the opportunity to honor our police and fire folks who, you know, respond to these kind of emergencies. And sometimes it boils down to that, literally that one first responder knowing what to do. So we're very proud of Officer Hurst and our police and fire departments. And we thank you for all that you guys do for the community. And that child's going to have some stories, or his mother's going to have some stories. And I hope that's the only time that he scares the hell out of his mother like this. Okay, we are going to go ahead and move on now to our consent calendar. And the consent calendar consists of routine or non-controversial items that are acted upon by a single action by the City Council unless otherwise requested by a council member. And public comment will be invited. I would ask first, does any member of the council wish to pull an item or ask a question? Okay, Councilmember Funk, you have a question?
I have one question on item 5.
On item 5, do you wish to pull or just ask the question?
Just ask the question.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so item 5 on the El Camino repairs. In that bid, staff considered options to make the street repair last longer by adding chip or double chip sealer. Numbers in the staff report did kind of suggest that it might be cost effective to do that. Are there other costs that were involved, and is the staff recommendation the most cost effective option that was considered?
Thank you, Councilmember Funk. That's a great question. In the staff report, there's a bid summary that's attached to the report. And that bid summary for the adults also includes traffic control. So you'd have to kind of negate that from that cost. But the real cost from what the base bid with the micro-surfacing, the micro-surfacing was about $97,500. And then Alt 1 had a chip seal, which was an additional $70,000. And we estimate maybe might get two more years out of a five-year lifespan for the micro-surface. And then Bid Alt 2 had a double chip seal, which could go up to 10 years, but would be another $145,000 for that surface treatment. The base bid, as I mentioned, for the micro-surfacing was $97,500. So we believe that it's the best value is to keep the base bid with a micro-surfacing, and that will provide the longest best value per dollar.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Seeing no others, we will open it up for public comment to see if any member of the public would like to comment on items E1 through E8 or anyone thereof. Please approach.
Jeff Hosslin, item number two, if it's correct, is about the road closures for hot August nights. Is that correct?
No, item number two is the June accounts payable and payroll.
Mm.
My last meeting we had item number two, I believe, was
other than we have an old agenda up there
back there.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you.
Right. Okay, maybe somebody can check that out. Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak on items E1 through E8? Okay, seeing no one approach, we'll bring it back to the council for a motion.
Move approval of the close of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Funk and a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Yes.
Mayor Robo?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, thank you. We will move on now to updates from the city manager, Mr. Lewis.
Yes, thank you, Mayor and members of council. I have several updates. If you have kids at home, you will know. And if you don't, I'm warning you that school starts tomorrow. So it will be exciting tomorrow morning in downtown as our students start their new school year. We continue to work with the school on communications to parents to make sure that we encourage several different routes, especially to the middle school. I have an eighth grader, so we've had 3 years of this, so we're really good at our route, but you need to find the best way to get your child to school. I do want to share that we will have additional patrols out and police at each of the school sites. And there may be a celebrity guest chief in a very prominent place tomorrow, making sure people are obeying the law, driving safely, and really that we can educate drivers on traffic patterns, especially the crosswalks in El Camino and the malls. So tomorrow school does start. School starts at 8:15. So if you don't have a student, I would some 7:50 to 8:30 be somewhere else in town. But that's tomorrow. And so also there is a sidewalk closure at fire station number one. So I do want to make sure people are aware of that. If you're planning to walk, if your student is walking to school, construction will be underway at fire station one for a while for a traffic way in Lewis. The sidewalks are closed. So only use open sidewalks, please. I hope that we will try and advise people of that as well. You can see in the graphic where those are posted, because people will be driving a lot of traffic tomorrow. So if you're a driver, please slow down, stay alert, and use extra caution when traveling through this area in particular. Let's have a great start to our school year. Our aquatics program continues, a very exciting Sunday aquatics. This is a new program. This is every Sunday in August. We're offering swimming opportunities to the community on Sundays, and it's been really hot. So this is a great option. Rec and lap swim are held from 12 to 2:45. So this is if you just want to float around and cool down and be in the water, this is for you. Swim passes are available for $5 per swim, or a family pass with 10 swims for $45. That brings the cost down per family if you want to do that. Passes must be purchased in person at the community center or at the pool only with cash or check. So that's a great thing to do on Sundays in August, Sunday aquatics program. And my hat's off to the recreation team, the council. This was a real priority to you to bring back aquatics last summer. It was your vision, and we did the best we could last summer with a promise to really expand the program this summer, and it's been a huge hit for the community. So appreciate your vision on that. Next, we have a coffee vending opportunity at Atascadero Lake Park. So if you walk around the park, you're there in the morning and you think, man, I wish I can get a coffee. Yeah, we do too. So we're opening up a vending opportunity at the lake. This is starting September 1st through the end of the year. You'll have a chance to serve coffee to zoo guests, park visitors, and early morning walkers from 7 to 11 a.m. This pilot program aims to enhance the visitor experience and supporting our local small business. So if you're interested in being the coffee vendor, you can go to atascadero.org/ALP Coffee. Applications are due Monday, August 17th by 5 p.m. at the community center. So hopefully we get some good vendors for this. This will be a nice amenity for our mornings at Lake Park. Also, as we continue to invest in opportunities and quality of life at Lake Park, we have food truck weekends are rolling now through September 27th from 12 through 4. You can see we have several, a different food truck every day or every day we offer this. And so you can see a variety of quesadillas, Mexican grill, Mary's cuisine, tacos on each of these days. So that's really great. 12 to 4 while exploring the park. Enjoy a snack from one of our local food trucks. The Saturday in the Park concert series continues as well. On Saturday, August 15th at 6:30, we have Electric Lavender Train. This is an evening filled with classic rock and roll covers. So very, very popular. It's a free concert. Bring your chair and food is available to purchase. If you're not at the concert series, the next biggest event in town, if you have missed this, you're really missing out, is Coffee with a Planner. Yes, Coffee with a Planner is a big hit. See what's happening in town. Share your ideas and help shape the future of the city. The conversation next will be on August 20th at 9 a.m. at Amsterdam Coffee. Usually we have a topic, but this one is more open. If you want to know why things are designed the way they are, or architecture, or how projects get approved, why the Kmart Center sits like it does. These are great questions you can ask to a planner, and they will have great answers for you, and you'll have personal time with this great group of staff people. Next, we have Cruisin' Weekend. That is right around the corner. We had about 6 tickets left this morning, so I'm not sure where we are now. If you haven't got your ticket, it may be too late. But it is August 21st. We have the 33rd annual cruise from 6:30 to 8:30, and the Midstate Cruisers on Saturday from 10 to 3. So a really great event. And then Dancing in the Streets, always a big event downtown, is 5 to 10. We do have a new route we've been talking about from Morro Road to San Jacinto. This will incorporate totally the downtown with the one lane of travel, so we think cars will be able to flow much better. We capped it out at 200. We also have pre-1990 or exotic or limited production. So the quality of the entries, I think, will be all stellar. And that's where we're headed. So cruise night is coming up. And oh, there's 5 passes left, I see. So you want to make sure you get those. If you haven't gotten one sold in the last 4 passes left. So they're moving. Well, you better get to the community center tomorrow at 9 o'clock. All right. This is a good sales pitch, I guess. Are there 3 passes left now, council member? All right. And then next, we have Movies in the Park. And what a great community we have. Look at all these things. This is Footloose, August 29th at 7. That's a fun one. And this is at Colony Park, 5599 Traffic Way. At 7 p.m. is when the activities and games start. The movie usually starts closer to 7:45, depending on the light that year. But lots of fun. And this has a family wiffle ball game at this one. So this will be terrific. So those are all the things going on this month. We don't have a second council meeting this month as well. So I hope the community enjoys that summer night in August. And council members, a much-earned break for you. You work very hard throughout the year. So this is our only council meeting for August. If any questions, I can answer them, or you can go to visit atascadero.com or atascadero.org. Thank you, Mayor and council members.
Thank you. See, we're getting the hand signals from Terry Banish on the number of registrations left. So that's how we're staying immediately updated here. So appreciate the report. Thank you for that. And how is, speaking of the fire department, you know, the building's knocked down, pile of dirt, everything's proceeding according to plan?
Things are proceeding. The slab was poured over at the station, and footings are being prepared at the police station. I was there today. The slab for the dispatch center and all utilities are in, and we believe that The framing will start this week. So you'll start seeing the new dispatch center pop up at, right in front of you on El Camino. That'll be exciting. And the site preparation continues with the compaction and grading at Station 1. So yeah, we are on track. We have a big meeting tomorrow, kind of all of our hands to circle all wagons from all units to look at the construction timeline, budget, and finishes. So we're doing great. Thank you, Mayor.
All right. Thank you. Does any member of the council have any questions of the city manager? Okay, seeing none, we will proceed on to community forum. And community forum is reserved for persons wishing to address the city council on an item not on the agenda, but over which the council has jurisdiction. The Brown Act does prohibit the council from entering into a discussion on a matter not on the agenda, although we can at our discretion ask a staff member to respond to a question or to meet with a speaker. So with that, I'm going to open it up to the public. Each person has 3 minutes, and we'd like to ask you to state your name for the record, please.
Good evening, Mayor and members of Atascadero City Council. My name is Katie Osman. I'm the Executive Director of the Cuesta College Foundation, and I am here on behalf of the Cuesta College Foundation to share that this is a historic year for scholarship support at Cuesta College. For the 2026-27 academic year, the foundation is awarding $1.19 million through 1,092 scholarships to 696 students, the largest annual scholarship investment in our history. More than $800,000 of that support is going to local students who graduated from San Luis Obispo County high schools. Here in Atascadero, we are especially proud that Atascadero High School graduates received 33 scholarships totaling close to $40,000. That support is helping local students take their next steps in higher education and career preparation. The foundation contributes an average of $350,000 annually to the Cuesta Promise. We also provide $50,000 each year in emergency grants and approximately $100,000 annually in departmental awards. Last Thursday, August 6th, we had the opportunity to celebrate our scholarship recipients along with many Atascadero High School graduates at our scholarship reception. None of this would be possible without the generosity of individuals, family members, community members, businesses, and organizations who provide support to Cuesta College. Thank you for your continued support, and go Greyhounds.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, Council. Wendy Lewis with El Camino Homeless Organization. I'm here to share several updates with you today. First is annually we hold a neighborhood stakeholders meeting, and that's scheduled for August 31st from 6 to 7 at Echo Atascadero. The second announcement is also an appreciation. Today, officially, working with our incredible planning department and city leadership, Echo received its certificate of occupancy for our Bellico Family Resource Center and Echo Family Wing. So we are so excited to announce to all of you and the months of support and effort it took to get us here. We will be having our ribbon cutting this Thursday at 10 o'clock to celebrate with the community. Best part of that is one of our success stories is going to share what the services meant to her and her children and what the future rooms where families will have their own rooms will mean to the families that will be staying with us. So super excited to that. I wish we could have a visual to show you. Last week, the community, we asked all our kids who are currently in Echo Atascadero what they wanted their beds to look like, and we put it out to the community, and by the next morning, every bed order was filled. And so right now, over at the shelter, we have beds ready for children with mermaids and butterflies and Superman and all kinds of things, so the kids will feel that sense of home. Thursday also will provide tours for people who would like to see more and learn more. And we're just so excited. We'll be welcoming our first families probably early September. But again, just appreciation to the city, to the planning department. It took a lot of effort to get us all to this point. We're just really grateful. And then we need to sustain what we just opened. So encouraging the community to come to Long Walk Home September 26th at 10 o'clock. It's an awareness march to show the community the steps the people we serve take forward steps in order to get back into housing, and that's the goal for everyone. The other last thing is, as of today, we've helped 222 individuals, their children, into stable permanent housing or kept them in housing through our homeless prevention funds. So just again, I want to share our appreciation for the community, city council, city leadership, and all of you that helped make that possible. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please. Clerk, I don't see a timer on the screen. Are we?
Good evening, Mayor, members of the City Council. My name is Grant Dunn. I'm a resident of Atascadero. I'm here tonight to urge the City Council to reject the implementation of Flock safety surveillance cameras. The gravity of this decision cannot be overstated. Bringing automated license plate readers into Atascadero is a fundamental shift from community policing to automated mass surveillance. It transforms our public streets into digital dragnets, permanently altering our town's character. The core threat of this technology is that it reserves the constitutional presumptions of innocenceness. In a free society, surveillance requires reasonable suspicion or a judge signed warrant. Flock cameras do the opposite. They automatically track, log, and store the daily movement of every single driver, regardless of wrongdoing. Every trip to work, the doctor, or place of worship becomes data in a personal corporate system. We are treated as suspects under potential watch until an algorithm clears us. This complete lack of judicial oversight bypasses our fundamental protections against unreasonable tracking. Furthermore, we are being asked to hand our community's personal data over to an out-of-state for-profit tech vendor. This introduces severe document risks of data breaches, unauthorized pooling, and data abuse. We do not need to sacrifice civil liberties to ensure safety. Our police department already coordinates effectively with residents through the voluntary SCRAM program, which respects privacy by only sharing footage after a specific crime occurs. That is policy built on trust, not automated suspicion. Installing Flock cameras is an invasive step backwards for local freedom. I urge this council to stand up for the constitutional rights and privacy of Atascadero's residents. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Good evening. My name's John Sanders. I live at 6790 Santa Inez. Have been there for almost 38 years. The first thing I'd like to say is thank you to the city for repaving Santa Inez. It's part of the F-14 rehabilitation project this year. I've been there for 38 years. I think that road was repaved 35 years ago. So, and then like 2 years later, the gas company came through and, you know, trenched a trench all the way down it. So anyway, with that said, this is my once a year request for traffic patrol on this stretch of Santa Inez between Atascadero Avenue and San Andreas, since, as Jim said, school starts tomorrow. The stretch of Santa Inez connects the upper and lower parking lots of the high school. During the morning arrival time, 7:30 to 8:10, lunchtime, 11:45 to 12:30, and after school from 3:15 to 4, it's pretty much a drag race strip down through there. These are the times that there really need to be patrols there. Additionally, the stop signs at Santa Inez and Atascadero and Santa Inez and San Andreas seem to not even be suggestions anymore. I know that there are many other areas that also experience traffic issues, especially around the schools, but I feel the need, feel this area needs attention, especially because the number of young drivers speeding in our neighborhood. So anyway, thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you for your comments. Okay.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin. I'm sure you missed me at the last meeting, but Chris Stapleton was more important than my social life being here. Moving forward, we brought this up about a year ago. It's time to bring it up again. That nice little bridge that we go across behind City Hall here by the middle school. Sorry, the other school there. Can we do something with those flower pots and maybe put something in it and water them or remove them? We're now about 2 years into it. It was brought up we were going to do it. They're still empty. Let's beautify that part, please. Next, Ryan Bentz is probably your hero in public works lately. He's had a few phone calls from me. He's gotten on things that have been very important to the infrastructure of our city. He can elaborate with you at some point, but he's got these things fixed, and he's been doing a really good job on that. I did want to bring that up. I am going to bring up Cruise Night and say we did a double whammy. I'm not so sure of the route now because a lot of people that have had parties on the other side, south side of Morrow Road for 30, 40 years now, aren't doing it because the cruise doesn't go by there. We cut the volume of vehicles from about 400 down to 200, and we changed the route. I'm not so sure that's in the best interest of our city. Yes, the vehicles may go faster, but I don't want to be by a fence on El Camino Real on the north end with the highway behind me in that traffic. I think it's a cost savings more than anything, and kind of bummed about that. Lastly, on my agenda tonight, and I appreciate the city manager bringing up the fact that school starts tomorrow. Trust me, I'm thrilled. You can't imagine how you get back onto a schedule. For our residents and maybe the parents of school-age children, it may be a good idea to remind them that we do have traffic lights and walk signals on ECR at West Mall and East Mall. I'm sure our police department will be there tomorrow to enforce that so they're not darting on and cross your vehicle, even if you are going 5 miles an hour. I would also hope that maybe, even though we missed it preschool, but maybe we can get it tomorrow, that someone from our police department sends the district office a letter that goes out to all the parents that are in the Atascadero Unified School District, because we've gotten about 12 of them in the last 5 days, that remind parents to remind their kids to obey the traffic laws. They're jaywalking across a green signal for an automobile is illegal. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to address the council? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back up here. I think everybody's looking forward to hot August nights, and we're going to see how the new route works. It needed to be changed, and you know we're just going to see what happens, you know, because we had to change it, and our staff gave it a great deal of thought, and we'll see where it goes. Okay, and obviously, yes, the comments about schools, our school opening is appreciated, and I think everybody recognized if you can stay away, it takes a week or two for the traffic pattern to settle down to normal. And I do believe, Chief, I don't know if you can address it all, the concerns, which are probably greatest around the high school, but if you can address it all, the concerns regarding speeding and particularly close to high school. Did I see another person wishing to speak? I will go ahead and open community forum back up for one more person. Go ahead.
Just a little FYI, I can't hear you when I'm sitting over there. I don't know if it needs to be louder.
Interesting. Thank you for pointing that out. I can hear my voice going into the microphone, you know, and having an amplified sound up here. So,
and I will admit, I have very poor hearing. My name's Margaret Bullock. I live on Yerba Avenue. We tried to talk to you before, and I just wanted to read you a letter that I wrote to Mr. Lewis earlier in July. I introduced myself. I live at 4537 Yerba Avenue and have done so since 1977. Over the years, for the most part, it's been a quiet, friendly neighborhood. We raised our daughter there, and now we have our grandchildren visiting often. Our grandson lives with us on the weekends. There were many children in the 1970s. They've grown. They've moved away. Many of their parents have moved away. Some have moved back. And now we're getting a whole new crop of children. And it's a wonderful place to live. We're having a new baby next month. right next door to us, and we're really looking forward to that. Unfortunately, for the past 20 years, the neighbor at 4543 Yerba Avenue has created a great many problems, and I know you're aware of it. She's a hoarder, and code enforcement is aware of that too. The city cleaned up her property in September, and it almost looks exactly the same as before they were there. She does not have trash pickup. And I watched the video from last May of this council meeting, and she didn't mention that, and she was saying she didn't have any help. But I want you to know that several of the neighbors on, we're not monsters. We have tried to help her. We have talked to her. What do you need? How can we help? And two of us have offered to pay for trash pickup for her, and she said no. And I honestly think she wouldn't be able to put a piece of trash in a trash can. It's that bad. One of the other problems is that trash, when it gets to be too much, she burns in her backyard. It's not leaves. It's not bushes that she's trying to get rid of. It's her trash. And when my windows are open, and they're open almost all year long, except for the summer, and that smell comes in, and I have asthma. There's a respiratory therapist who lives between me and this house, and he said he cannot ever open his windows because of the smell coming from that place. She also has a problem with her son. And I know, I was a mental health professional. I know what's going on over there. And it's sad. It's very, very sad. But she is not helping. And I think that you read in Mr. Shortino's letter that was given to you that she doesn't take it that seriously. But she has threatened, she doesn't, her son has threatened our lives, have threatened the neighbors, yells, screams, okay, runs up and down the neighborhood. And right, he doesn't have just one dog. He has two large dogs.
Right. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off. Because
sorry, I wasn't watching.
But
I just wanted you to know, again, this neighborhood, we don't go outside because we're afraid of him. So we're just asking for you to help.
Okay, thank you. And yes, we are aware of it and did receive that letter, and we are aware of the situation. So thank you very much for speaking this evening. Appreciate that. Okay, seeing no one else coming forward, Chief, if you could address any extra efforts on the part of the police department to address speeding during the first week of school.
Yes, Mayor. And as a matter of fact, I think someone else had mentioned, actually you mentioned the simple fact that for the first couple of weeks, traffic patterns are going to be a little erratic. There is going to be speeding. There's going to be people running stop signs. So these are all the things that we're aware of as well. So we will be upping our presence there as well. It's not just the speeding. It's not just the stop signs. It's you know, everybody needs to pay attention and follow all the traffic laws. You know, we're going to be out there to help educate people, but we're also law enforcement officers, so you know, we do write tickets as well. So please remind your loved ones, remind your neighbors, and especially our students, that it's this is all about safety, and that's what our priority is.
Okay, thank you, Chief. Okay, we're going to move on to item H1, which is a public hearing confirming the cost of weed and vegetative growth abatement. I'm going to turn this discussion over to our Fire Chief, Casey Bryson, who looks like he's being joined by our Fire Marshal and incoming Fire Chief, Dave Von Son.
Thank you, Mayor. That's correct. Battalion Chief Dave Von Son will be handling the presentation.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm here tonight to talk about confirming the cost of weed abatement and the vegetation growth abatement. So just a little bit background of our weed abatement. In April, Council adopted the resolution declaring the weeds a nuisance. We inspected 11,282 parcels in March. 5,869 notices were sent out in April, which is 413 less than previous. As every year, our weed abatement deadline is June 1st. 5,869 properties were inspected again after the June 1st deadline. We had 77 properties tagged to abate, and 27 properties were abated by our contractor. Here's the quick visual of the timeline of what I just went over. And here is our 10-year history of private parcels cut. As you can see, we were about 17 parcels less than what we abated last year. So the recommendation to council is to adopt the draft resolution confirming the cost of vegetative growth, weeds, and or refuse rubbish from abatement. And here is, we have a couple before and after pictures of what was tagged to abate before and what the what it looked like after the contractor. Here's one example, and here's another example of what our contractors did and why we asked them to abate. And here's an example of good weed abatement and a success with the quick extinguishment of a fire we had on Carmelita on June 10th of this year. This property had its proper abatement. We had a fire breakout with lower spread rate of spread and easier containment time for our first responders. And that's all I have for you.
All right.
Any questions?
Okay, thank you. Does any member of the council have any questions for Chief? Go ahead, Mark.
Just a reminder to people that when we hire a contractor to go in weed bait, boy, it's really loud now. Thanks, Charles. I imagine it's cheaper if they would hire a contractor ahead of that, right? I mean, so they would be saving money. The same thing's going to happen, but if they force the hand on us or on you, then it's going to cost them more, right? Most likely.
That's correct. We do have an admin fee of 166% of what the actual cost of the abatement is from our contractor added on top of it. So it is much much less expensive for people to hire them prior to the June 1st deadline.
So that's incentive for them to get it done. But thanks for everything that you guys do to keep this. I'm glad to see the number is only 26. Thinks last year was a bit of an anomaly. It jumped up, but consistently in the mid-20s to get that done. And that's an important thing. And it proven success with fires not spreading if it's done properly. So thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Peak.
Yeah, we said 77 abatement letters. Is that correct? And then 27 we actually paid the contractor to take care of.
Yeah, that's correct.
So that means there's a grace period in June for when they receive a letter, they can still do it at no extra cost if they handle it themselves before we show up?
Yeah, so the process is we start the inspections June 1, and if they don't get notification that they're out of compliance June 1, except for a door tag, or we on a vacant lot, we'll stake the property. And then those go directly into our GIS system, which creates a list of properties to abate that go to our contractor. So whenever the contractor gets that first list is when he starts going to work.
So essentially if a landlord is out of the area or somehow they miss all the notifications or it slips their mind, they have at least when they get the notice, they can go and whip it out for the week before we get there.
Correct. If they actually physically see that orange tag, the property owner cuts the property prior to the contractor getting there, and then he just drives by.
Hey, thank you. Any questions on my right? Okay, seeing none, we'll open this up to public comment. See if anybody would like to address the council on this subject. This is a public hearing. Okay, seeing none, we will close public comment and bring it back to the council for a motion.
I will move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion by Councilmember Funk, a second by Councilmember Peak. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yeah.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Yes.
Mayor Robo?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, thank you. We will move on to item I-1, which is the subject is fire department command staff restructure. And I will turn this presentation over to Fire Chief Bryson.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Very excited to bring this management report forward to you tonight. We are discussing a potential restructure of the fire department command staff. This staff report that you have before you, it has six recommendations. I broke them down into two slides here. There's a lot here, so I'll go through the first three and then we'll discuss the next three. The first is to authorize the city manager to add an additional battalion chief position to our total budgeted positions. So that additional one would total three. Then it's to authorize the city manager to restructure all three battalion chiefs to a 24-hour shift schedule. Next is to authorize the city manager to add a fire captain position to fill the role of fire marshal and remove a firefighter position. Three recommendations to follow up to make that happen. We would ask to adopt a draft resolution for non-represented professional and management workers and confidential employees. That's the updated MOU to allow for the 56-hour work week shift battalion. Second, or next, authorize the city manager to execute a side letter with the Atascadero Professional Firefighters Local 3600 for the existing Memorandum of Understanding dated July 1st, 2024 to June 30, 2027. And that would be to add the fire captain fire marshal position. And then finally, last recommendation, authorize the Director of Administrative Services to allocate $150,000 in general fund reserves to liquidate a portion of the holiday leave liability, which we'll talk about in a minute. Prior to 2019, the fire department command structure included one fire chief, six shift fire captains, but one fire marshal, fire captain. In September of 2019, City Council increased one position and we started the battalion chief position at that point. We added a 40-hour operations battalion chief. And at that point, we moved the fire marshal, fire captain to the battalion chief of community risk reduction. Fire department command staff has been in this capacity since 2019. We have the fire chief and the two battalion chiefs. We, between the three of us, we rotate our night and weekend emergency coverage. So one of the three of us is always on call. And that's worked well. Since that time, we have felt definitely the support of council, the community through D20. We've increased equipment and engines. We're building new fire stations. And in that 2023-2025 budget, council did add an additional firefighter position, which I'll show on the organization chart. So we have felt a lot of support through the community and through council, and we're asking to move up to the next step here. As part of council's goals of increased public safety, enhancing public safety, we presented a standards of cover document back in January at our strategic planning. And that was really the kickoff of a long-term staffing plan addressing staffing shortages in the fire department. It's a plan that would last years, budget cycles, whatever it takes, but eventually it increases staffing slowly to get to a third fire station at some point in the future. This first step is increasing daily staffing, identified in the standards of cover that we discussed. Increase daily staffing to seven by adding shift battalion chiefs. I'm going to show you our current organization chart. There's the fire chief. We have an administrative assistant, our two battalion chiefs that work 40 hours, and then our three shifts, station one, station two, each A, B, and C shift. And you can see that firefighter on station one, A shift, there is that fourth person. That was the 19th position that we added in that 23-25 budget. It's been a great addition to the department, very, very beneficial. It allows us when we have someone on long-term leave for an injury or a baby, something of that nature, we can kind of float that firefighter up into the vacancy and stay whole. But you can also see that it is one of the six engine companies is a four-person company, which does increase ongoing daily staffing. I'm going to get into the shift battalion and the reason for it, but first of all, the timing of this. We talked last meeting, my retirement is coming up. We just heard from Chief Van Son. He will be leaving the fire marshal position, and he's been confirmed as the next fire chief. This moment presents a logical and strategical opportunity to make this reorganization. The shift battalion chiefs. It's a critical component of modern fire service delivery. These are management level chief officers providing on-scene supervisory support for the engine companies 24 hours a day. So they work out of the fire station, may have an office hours, office time here at City Hall with admin now, but they are with the department 24 hours a day. Provide direct on-scene command support for the fire companies. That's a big piece of this, is the support for the companies during an emergency incident that allows the fire captain to go to work, supervise their crew, provide safety, while the battalion chief 24 hours a day is there to supervise the entire incident. This is a standard pretty much in our county and the greater area to have a shift battalion chief. Only Atascadero and Morro Bay do not use this model as of right now in the county. So how does this work? We have our one operations battalion chief who works the Monday through Friday hours. He would move to a 48-hour shift. We would then internally promote two fire captains to the rank of battalion chief, and there's a trickle-down effect all the way down. So two engineers promote to captain, two firefighters promote to engineer, and then it leaves basically one vacancy for a new firefighter absorbing that 19th position. So I'll show that org chart here in a minute, but by using that 19th firefighter, we will be only needing to hire one additional person to replace that, to get to the seven full-time firefighters on shift each day. In addition to the emergency functions that I already talked about, battalion chiefs provide high-level second-in-command type support to the fire chief. They manage large projects, provide leadership in an EOC, Emergency Operations Center, wildfire prevention, strategic planning, public outreach, budgeting, training of fire and city staff for emergency operations, high-level support to the chief. It's really an interesting position, because I mentioned how they support the fire captains by supervising and directing and managing, overseeing large incidents, but they really do allow the fire chief to focus more outward, strategic thinking, greater planning by taking up some of these high-level assignments. So it really is a support for both sides of the operation. The final piece I have on here is the career pathways and then the employee retention, the future leadership. What this allows us to do is move up these aspiring fire captains into the battalion chief role. When we have had people leave for other agencies, two of four, say in the last 10 to 15 years, have left our agency to become battalion chiefs, shift battalion chiefs in other agencies. So this really does keep our leaders here. I would foresee the next fire chief and some years down the road coming out of these shift battalions. So it really does develop our future leadership. Here's the proposed organization chart. Again, you have the fire chief with an administrative assistant, and then an A shift, B shift, and C shift battalion chief supervising both Fire Station 1 and Fire Station 2 captains. You can see that it's a complete balance now, seven each shift, seven on duty per day. And that final piece off to the side is the fire captain, fire marshal, which is part of the recommendation. We'll talk about that for a minute. We just heard from Chief Van Son. He has been confirmed as our next chief, leaving a vacancy at the fire marshal. Now presents a unique time to restructure that and better meet the needs, be a little fiscally conservative on that position. We no longer will need, with shift battalions, the fire marshal to operate at the battalion chief level. We can go to a fire captain. They will handle the same duties, but they won't need to fill in the nights and the evenings and the weekends and provide that oversight and that coverage to the engine companies having the shift battalion. So now would be the opportunity to restructure this rank to a fire captain. This would be a 40-hour position, Monday through Friday when businesses are open, able to work with the public, handle inspections and businesses and that sort of thing. Similar programs, fire prevention, inspection, plan review, public education, weed abate, and fuels management. but being fiscally responsible, we feel like this would be the right time for the ship battalion to move this to the fire captain level. This also supports, like the other internal promotions, this would be potentially a promotion from one of our fire engineers also to move up to the captain rank, and then a firefighter would promote to engineer, and then this would be a new firefighter position at the bottom through that vacancy. Impact on the department. We hit on several of these already. The promotional opportunities throughout. We would have all ranks able to promote. Substantial benefit there, creating new people and new positions. And it's a big deal for the fire department, from firefighter all the way up to the battalion chief. It's really a commitment to our long-term people staying with us, having those opportunities to move up and grow. The increase of daily staffing is huge, being able to take 7 people immediately that are in uniform, response ready, in a vehicle to an incident. It's huge to move up to that 7-person daily staffing instead of 6. The increase of the ability of the battalion chief to support the fire chief, it exponentially grows. Having 3, 1 on per day on shift, but having 3 there to take up those big projects, the fire chief will rest easier knowing that there is a shift battalion on duty able to handle that emergency. Fire chief can now focus on whatever the strategic plan or the preparing for council or whatever it is, knowing that the shift battalion is ready to go. We'll talk a little bit about the fiscal impact of this move. There are actually minimal employee salary cost increases. By moving all these new positions in low into the salary schedule, they all promote up, but they start off at the bottom end of the salary schedule. There's actually very little salary increases by this move. It pretty much is a status quo there. There are some overtime costs. We are now keeping 7 people on duty. Each day we spend overtime when someone is sick, someone takes a holiday day or a vacation day, we backfill. So now with the shift battalion, any one of the 7 from the battalion chief down to the firefighter, they take a vacation day, we will be filling that position to keep those 7 on per day. It's estimated at about $80,000 annually to keep all 7 on duty all the time. We do have some one-time costs. We'll be outfitting the 2 new firefighters, promotions at the different ranks. We do have background checks, new PPE, their custom-sized turnouts, and radios and tablets. And those are one-time costs because we would not have those extra costs of available in our operating budget. So we'd be asking for the one-time costs. And then the holiday leave accrual that we mentioned in the recommendations. In light of council's goal of fiscal sustainability, we thought that this would be meet council's goals by limiting the holiday leave in the management MOU. So the shift battalions, they accrue holiday because they work those holidays, Christmas and Thanksgiving. People retire from the fire department after 20, 25 years of service with large accrual banks, sometimes hundreds of hours. So to be in that spirit of fiscal responsibility, capping that holiday time at a 3-year cap. And then as we bring people into this position, paying them down to 1 year. So it allows them to grow up to that 3-year cap and encouraging the use of that holiday time. We expect this to be for those 2 new battalion chiefs and actually our existing one, not to exceed $150,000. And that really is the bulk of the presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions. That completes my presentation.
Okay, thank you, Chief. Very thorough. I'll start on my right. Councilmember Newsom, any questions for the Chief?
No, I appreciate all your hard help and time that went into this.
Thank you. Councilmember Funk?
You talk about supervision.